Hi, Steve Artimer here, and welcome to the New Life Live podcast. We hope to provide help and hope in your life through God's Word, counselors, and psychologists as we answer questions from listeners who call with the challenges of life. Let's go to today's episode.
Hello, everyone. We are so grateful that you decided to listen today, and maybe today is the day that you need to call. You can call us at 1-800-229-3000. We're going to take calls for the next couple of hours, and I know that there are many of you who are in need of help. We hear it all the time, and I just want to invite you into this space where you can get some direction and maybe some insight into the challenges that you're facing. And by we, I'm talking about Chris Williams and Dr. Alice Benton. And, you know, we always like to hear the wisdom of our co-host. Alice is going to share with us her wisdom this morning or afternoon, wherever this finds you.
We're going to talk about family arguments, Becky and Chris, and how we handle them. And it helps me and my family to see them in part as a spiritual battle, because usually at the base, they are a need or a hurt, a struggle, or a fear that we have that we don't know how to bring to light in a healthy or mature way. So it comes out sideways. We can be snippy, argumentative, whiny, or finagle to get our way, but in a devious manner rather than in an assertive, straightforward manner. There is certainly argumentativeness in my own home. I think all families deal with this at some level. So this is how we handle it. We try to do parental confession, both of our own grumpiness, which is not something that happened in my family of origin. We all tended to just say that we were fine. And we try to confess when we're harsh or when we're anxious and it's coming out at our kids. So we try to model it. Try is the operative word there. And then when it's happening with our kids, we point it out. We ask them to stop. As obvious as that seems, giving a gentle request that they stop sometimes works, but not always. If we have to separate, we do. Our three go-tos are go over to your bed, sit there by yourself, not doing anything until you're ready to apologize. Sit in a chair facing the wall, the number of minutes that matches your age, or loss of screen time. And any one of those three tend to work with our young children. And then once we've calmed down, we try to dig out the underlying need. The comfort circle is the go-to with how to do that. And we so often find what just looks like disobedience or irritability on the surface. It was rejection at school. It was fear of an upcoming test. It was feeling rejected by one of us other family members. So there's usually something underneath it. Lastly, family prayer. And because the power of the word can help overcome the spiritual side of the battle. So just one verse, 1 Peter 3:8-9. Don't repay evil with evil or insult with insult. Easier said than done in our family.
For sure. Oh, that's so good, Alice. And I just think that the verse that came to my mind was be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. You know, James is talking about how we engage in our communication and the importance of that communication. And what's interesting about being slow to speak, you know, quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry, is that under threat and intensity, our brain does the exact opposite. Our survival brain goes into being quick to speak, quick to anger. And in fact, that part of our brain operates at a much faster speed. And so it takes tremendous practice and discipline to be a better listener and be a slower speaker and to put aside our anger long enough for the truth to emerge.
Yes. Yeah. That's so true. And you know what I was also thinking about? You mentioned the comfort circle, Alice. I was thinking about being able to identify the feelings. When you talked about how you can, you know, as a parent, you can say, I'm a little distracted right now, and that's why I snapped. I'm sorry. To be able to teach your family how to describe their insides is really powerful, and to be able to have those tools of the soul words or the feeling words can really be helpful no matter what your age is. I would challenge any of us who are listening, how would you describe how you feel? You know, that's really a tool that we all can benefit from. Thanks, Alice. We'll be right back after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
I'm Steve Artimer with a New Life Moment.
In the movie Groundhog Day, Bill Murray plays a character who finds himself living the same day over and over again. At first, he thinks he's going crazy, but in time, he decides to identify his shortcomings, address his faults, and make better choices. The movie's moral is basically this. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, all the while expecting different results. And if you accept that working definition of insanity, then you'd probably admit that from time to time, we're all a bit off kilter. Everyone has areas of their life in need of change. And when you recognize a problem and sincerely desire better for your life, well, that's a good start. Yet genuine change requires more than that. And that can be intimidating. If you'd like help stopping the insanity of your own Groundhog Day so you can live differently and better, visit me, Steve Arterburn, at newlife.com. And thanks for listening to this New Life Moment.
We are so glad to hear from Steve. He's coming back next week. But I was thinking about that whole concept of everyone has areas that need changing, that need improving. And I thought, how many people are listening thinking, I don't have anything wrong with me. It's the other person. They need to change, right? And I think that's just something that we can all experience Groundhog Day if we're not careful to really inspect our life. That's what recovery is all about. We know that. Go ahead,
Becky. We watched Groundhog Day not that long ago, and it was based on my decades ago memory of the movie. What I forgot about was his despair and suicidality.
Yeah,
I watching it with my kids, we had to fast forward through life. I didn't remember that it got this dark.
Yeah,
but we so often hear when we're working with clients that if problems are left unattended, that's the direction they go. Mm-hmm. Sin, illness, it leads towards that destructive path of thoughts of death, wanting to escape this life. Folks, call us and let us help you before it gets to that point. And if it is already at that point, absolutely call us because we want to help with that.
That's good.
You know, we were talking this morning, the staff meets for devotions on Wednesday, and we were talking today about the fact that God does hear us and that in this world, we are hearing so many stories of desperation, like what you're describing from a comedic movie. You know, Groundhog Day we recognize as comedy, but there is that dark side. And what I would encourage you, if you're in a dark place today that you feel that you have no hope and there's no answer, that you've tried everything, you haven't tried anything. You know, I just think I shouldn't say you haven't tried anything. You have not tried the thing that's going to work. So keep pushing forward. Reach out for help. We are here for you. You know, we've talked before about how you can get your question asked, even if you're not listening when we're recording. And we had a question submitted by Janelle, who listens on our podcast. And she said, any advice about what we can do to help our adult son with anxiety and depression? She goes on to say, my 32-year-old adult son has been suffering with anxiety and depression for over 12 years. He stated that he's unable to feel anyone's love for him, even though he knows that his family loves him. And during the last year, he was starting to have some feelings and started a relationship with a woman. He was doing very well during the time, but after 7 months, she ended the dating relationship. 2 months ago, he spiraled into a deep depression and has a lot of anxiety. He won't eat or show up for work. His primary care physician started him on an antidepressant and an anxiety meds a month ago, but he's not getting better. He continues to see his therapist, but doesn't seem to help. He's mentioned suicide ideations. His father and I continually tell him that we love him and want to help, but he says there's nothing we can do. He is a believer, but he's very turned off by any God discussions at this moment. We're desperate to know what to do. That's exactly what we're talking about. Chris, Alice, what would you say to Janelle, who needs some help for their adult son?
Well, first and foremost, I would let her know two things. I'm so sorry of what she's going through. I can't imagine the struggle that leads to her own maybe increased anxiety, increased depression as seeing her beloved son go through this. And secondly, that, you know, I'm really impressed by what they're doing for their son, that they are getting him some really good help. He's on an antidepressant medication. He is seeing a therapist. I will say this, you know, and this is true for all of us. It's, you know, it's true for me as a therapist. My work with a client may not always work. And that's okay. But it's not okay if we keep working something that doesn't work. So, for instance, I may be working with a client and be like, you know what? Dr. Alice Benton is a better fit. So let's try it. She may come at something from a different angle and a different perspective and a different level of care that could really help him. So it's really important that we understand that therapists, like any other profession, is not one size fits all. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I would say is that, you know, this is a severe medical and psychiatric condition that mm-hmm. he's in. And one time a week therapy mm-hmm. just as may not be the proper level of care. He may need to move up into an, you know, intensive outpatient, what's known as an IOP, maybe even a partial hospitalization, or even an inpatient to try to stabilize what's going on inside of him so they can really get underneath and see what's going on and accurately treat the depression and anxiety that he's experiencing.
That's great insight. Alice?
When we hit a dead end and it seems like nothing is working, and he was making some of those hopeless statements, you can't help me, this isn't helping, then we do evaluate how frequently we're meeting, how much mm-hmm. the medication is working, and should that be adjusted? Or should the format of therapy change, such as including family members in the session so that the parents can strategize with the clinician, what can we do differently? Because nothing that we're doing seems to be getting through to our son. And then, you know, we at New Life, we're such proponents of group work because we know group adds a dynamic that's just not accessible in the same way in individual therapy. And so getting with peers who are going through similar struggles, it can lead to breakthroughs that don't always happen in the individual work. So we've got to think about, if nothing is working, then you don't drop everything, although that's the temptation. Rather, you make adjustments and you add more in until you start to get some movement, because evidence shows us these techniques, therapies, they do work over time if we stick with it, but they need to be adjusted.
Well, you know, the powerful thing about group is reflecting back on when he was in this relationship, how his symptoms improve. So that shows the power of relationship. And the other part of that group experience is the buoyancy that you're not alone.
Yeah.
You know, that you are lifted up by these other folks that may be struggling with the same thing. You know, I love what both of you are saying. And I know that there are so many people that are in similar situations where they feel like they've tried everything. And what you just said, Alice, is so true. You don't dump it all. You don't say, okay, nothing worked, so we don't do anything. It's tweaking it, like you said, Chris, where you mm-hmm. maybe you're not the therapist for this part of the journey. And as therapists, we want to champion the growth and the healing of the person. And if hospitalization is part of it, it's not because there's something wrong with him permanently.
That's right.
Is really to get deep down into what is causing all of this. And we know so much more about neurobiology, and it's just really powerful.
You know, and Becky, I think that's Chris. A really important point because, you know, we can take it for granted, those of us working in the field, that there really is a neurobiological aspect going on here to the mm-hmm. point that, like, hey, if you're dealing with type 1 diabetes and your current course of treatment isn't working, we don't say you're a bad person. Or there's something fundamentally wrong with you because you need to seek a higher level of care or a different type of treatment. Well, we're talking about two organs in the body. Mm-hmm. One is the pancreas, one is the brain. The difficulty when we're treating the brain is that it's way more complex and obviously impacts our decision-making centers mm-hmm. and our relational centers, everything about us. But when we can reduce it down to, hey, we're seeking to treat a very complex, difficult organ in the body to treat, the human brain, and we reduce it down to that, we can take away the stigma and shame that surrounds it. And so again, if I have a loved one suffering from cancer, I'm going to do everything mm-hmm. I can. That's a life-threatening condition. Severe depression, anxiety can be a life-threatening situation. So I'm going to do everything I can to treat it and treat it well. And there, I would love for us to live in a world where there would be no shame and embarrassment around that, as the similar to the there would be with treating cancer or diabetes.
I was just thinking about that whole concept of shame, Chris, because that's exactly what comes into play when we're talking about mental illness or unwellness when it mm-hmm. comes to our thought processes, our feelings. You know, depression, as we know, statistics will tell you that it's like the number one reason for employee failure.
Yeah.
You know, that they don't show up for work and they can't do their job. And we know that there's all there. We're multidimensional beings. We don't just work and we don't just, you know, be with their family. We've got all kinds of things going on. And we do want to get informed on what can we do that could help, that could move it along.
And as this young man has the courage to admit he's had thoughts of suicide, and he's
really
got
good.
The willingness to be in therapy, we've got to make sure to praise when we see our family members making some effort, even if we're worried that it's not enough. But he's being honest, and he is participating. Folks, I want to bring your attention to something. There's been a 62% increase in suicidal ideation over the last over 10 years or so. That's a massive increase, and particularly in young people. We're hearing from high schoolers that 22% say that they have had serious thoughts about suicide, and 18% will admit that they've made a suicidal plan. 10% admit that they've attempted. And so to ask our children how they're doing, how their heart is, if they've ever thought about hurting themselves, if they've ever wanted to not live, these are scary questions to ask. But knowing that the thoughts are frequent, and suicidal ideation can be contagious. If it's happening in a peer group, it's more likely for others to catch on, to start thinking about as well. There's a contagion to it. Mm-hmm. And so parents, please bravely ask your children if they've ever had these thoughts.
Yeah.
You know, I just heard a report the other day that talked about how there are many people, because of media, social and otherwise, they're self-diagnosing. And what we know for sure is, because they're not being diagnosed with a professional, then they do the whole WebMD and Google, and then they determine what the outcome will be. And I know that you guys, when we've been with clients and we're delivering some diagnoses, and it may be difficult for them to hear, we're present with them. And we can give them the hope of what a strategy will be going forward. But if you are self-diagnosing by looking at a social media or TikTok or something, but you don't have a professional to really unwind that, it can create desperation, which leads to these percentages that you're talking about.
Yeah, you know, I used to say this when I taught psychopathology at the, you know, in the master's program. I said, you know, diagnosis is not a bludgeon force.
Right.
It's a scalpel. Because each diagnosis is going to come with what we call a criterion, a list of symptoms. No one is going to fulfill all of those perfectly. So there is so many details and nuances in each of these diagnoses. The other aspect of these is that these diagnoses exist in a person in real time that has tons of variables that are unique to them. It requires a very, very keen eye, deep understanding, and an ongoing process to say, this is what's happening with you, this is what it's called, and this is what we need to do with it. So to carry that into the world, really kind of in a nilly-willy, careless way, is to carry a weapon into the world in a careless way.
And you know, the intricacies of the care and the treatment require partnership with the caregiver, with the person. It's just like what you said earlier, Chris, if this was a physical issue, like if you are having cardiac problems, you don't go to the cardiologist one time, get the diagnosis, and then you just go and figure it out. And then you have a heart attack and die. I mean, like, nobody would ever expect you to do that. But a lot of times when we're dealing with mental and emotional health care, we are thinking it's a one and done, or you know, or we listen to a bludgeoned diagnosis, which I love that. That just is such a great word picture, because it can be devastating to hear that you have bipolar disorder, or to hear that you have a depression episode. But there's hope. We have tools. We have people who are skilled at helping. You're not alone. If you're struggling today, you know we're here for you. We've got all kinds of ways that we can get you on a journey of healing. And we know that there's hope. Give us a call, 1-800-229-3000. We'll be back right after this.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free, 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. you know, we were talking at the break, it's a pretty serious conversation, but serious conversations require that we offer the help that you can get, and we want to be there for you. So if you are struggling, give us a call, 1-800-229-3000. We're going to go talk with Angela, who's calling us from Washington, D.C., listens on WAVA. Hello, Angela. We're so glad you called. How can we help you today?
Yes, please help me, because I'm getting weaker and weaker lately. It's hard for me to digest unfair treatment, false accusation, disrespect, and stronger and stronger lately, I ask myself, what's the point of living? What's the point of fighting for every single thing? Nothing is easy for me. Everything I have to fight for something that is so simple. So I almost wanted to end it on that on the 26th, March 26th, when again another disrespect happened. I thought to myself, okay, I wish I was on that bridge in Baltimore to just be done with everything. And I said to myself, I'm going to make just one phone call for somebody to listen to me so that I can express myself. If that person doesn't pick up, I am done. I am done. So luckily, my cousin who was at work wasn't even supposed to pick up. So my phone not call and pick up. And I was able to express what is going on, and I can say that he saved me, because if he did not pick up, I was just going to go. Because it's a lot to just struggle for simple, for things so simple. And when you face false accusation, when you face an unfair situation, I'm just trying to understand, what can I do here and there? And for this situation, for example, at the post office, when I opened a P.O. box, and for 2 months I did not receive any mails. And I went over there every week asking what's going on, why am I not receiving any mails? And they, nothing. I gave my number. Somebody will call me back. No one ever did. So when it's almost 2 months, this person will tell me, well, you're not getting any refund because it's over 30 days. And I'm like, I have been here every week. No one ever said anything to me. How come now the reason is because of 30 days? But that mail, that box has never been activated. So I'm trying to understand. I'm not yelling. So, I'm not arguing. And that man said, oh, if you don't leave, I'm going to call the police on you.
Angela.
Like, the police for what? It's the second time it happened to me for those front desk people. Huh. Front desk people, receptionist people. Usually, I'm just trying to understand something, and you're already receiving of calling the police for
Angela, can I ask can I jump in and ask a question? Are you currently in an abusive relationship?
I was. I'm not anymore.
You're not anymore. Good. Because
I'm alone, and loneliness is not helping. Also,
yes, I hear that. Thank you for saying that, because I was going to check in on who's around you, and so if you don't mind me jumping in, because your situation is really serious and heartbreaking, and it's actually scary to me, because I want you to be safe. But a lot of times when we're in abusive relationships, it sort of takes over not just our external world, but our internal world as well, where we think not just this person's against us, but the whole world is against us. And there can be evidence out there to really affirm that. Mm-hmm. And so, Angela, what I want to really, really encourage you to do is are you in any sort of therapy? Are you seeing a therapist in your area?
I had a therapist before, on and on, and I just get tired when they need to move to another country or get pregnant and don't come back after maternity leave. I have to start my story all over again.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about the ex-husband, and then I cannot keep a consistent schedule because I don't have a stable
income.
So it's just a pain to have different people starting all over.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Angela, what I want to encourage you to do, and we have some therapists in that area, you know, a couple that I think of in particular, a couple of groups I think are, you know, do fantastic work. And I'm wondering if there is, we talked about earlier in the show about group work And if a lot of times group work is a little bit less expensive to get into, but the irony of that is it can be more effective,
yes,
you know,
true.
And so you have a lower, you know, barrier of entry, mm-hmm. But a higher level of service. And so I'm just wondering if we can connect you or somehow get you into some group therapy in your area to gain more support. And one, so you don't have to live, you know, a life of isolation.
Yes.
And then getting a medical evaluation as well.
And Angela, you seem to know that another person was part of the answer, that you bravely called somebody else, and that was a safety point for you to do rather than to take your life. You knew you needed someone else, and that's what Chris is pointing you to. You said you're alone, and when we're alone, despair overwhelms us, and then being mistreated by people, I'm going to call the police on you. It makes sense that you lose the meaning in your life. You lose that sense of connection. Go ahead.
Whoops.
To a point where I will want to make one more phone call. I might get to a point where, okay, I'm not listening to anybody. I am done. Because those things happen over and over and over.
Angela, here's the thing. You are exhausted from all the attempts. Mm. And that's where that desperation kicks in. But the group will be part of that healing process. And we're going to get you connected with a group and a counselor. And our call center folks are great with helping you with those next steps. I also think we're going to send you a copy of Take Your Life Back so that you can. I don't want you to give up hope, Angela. Mm-hmm. You have a lot to offer. We'll be right back after this.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now, let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
Glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. We're going to get connected. We're having Angela get connected with one of our call center staff. You know, this is what we were talking about earlier, that it can be such a struggle to continue on when you are facing so many obstacles, but we know that there is a way. You know, one of the things we do here at New Life is we answer the call when people, you know, are reaching out for help. And right now we're doing a matching gift campaign. You've heard me talk about this, and I cannot encourage you more to be part of being able for us to answer that call. And your gift will be doubled up to $400,000. We had a group of donors that believe in what we do here at the ministry. We're helping people. And I want to invite you to be part of helping people. If you want to reach out and help someone, know that we are there for them, that we're going to connect them to that next help, next helping hand. You can go to 1-800, or you can call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. You can text the word MATCH to 28950, or you can go to newlife.com/donate and make your gift there. Whatever gift you make will be doubled, and it will make a difference in the lives of so many people. Now, we're going to go back to what we were doing before, and we are going to
Becky, can
answer...
Could I quick say,
yes?
When you're as weary as Angela is, and most of your human interactions have been hurtful and rejecting, it feels impossible to make that next call. Why would I trust anybody when everybody has left me or hurt me? And the enemy wants us to believe that there's nobody that will understand. Mm-hmm. Nobody will be able to break through. And sometimes it has to be the safety of only a professional relationship, because there may not be any trustworthy people in your social circle. So, Angela, we honor that you called us, and we will keep helping you. Stay on the line with us, folks. Keep calling, because we can help her reach breakthrough.
Well, and Chris said something at the break. Chris, you want to repeat what you said about the one call? It's like,
what did I say? I was saying, you know, as it says, it takes one more call. I was kind of being silly, but it takes one more's many calls.
Yeah,
it does. Yes. You know, and God created us as relational beings. And this cannot be overstated enough. You know, and I oftentimes remind people, the term body of Christ is used many times in the New Testament. There's only one reference to Jesus, and it's the Eucharist. Mm. Every other time the body of Christ is mentioned in the New Testament, it refers to the people of God. And that is a profound responsibility, I think, that we need to sit with and feel the gravity a little bit more. But it's also a great resource that is so underutilized and underappreciated. But all of that speaks to that God has designed us to experience Him through each other. And through the help that's available to each other.
And that's what we're here for.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're trying to do at New Life.
Well, thank you for that, Chris. We're going to go back to the calls, and I want to talk with, and I can't see her name. She's calling from, I think her name's Chris, calling us from Raleigh, North Carolina, listens on Sirius XM. Chris, are you there?
I am.
Yes, okay. How can we help you today, Chris?
My daughter is 35 and lives in Ireland. She completely cut me out of her life about 5 or 6 years ago. I've had no contact since then, and I have no way to get in contact with them. She's married, and I don't know what to do or where to go with it.
Oh, Chris, it must have felt like your heart was ripped out when she ended communication, and you can't figure out any way to reconnect with her. How dreadful of a situation. What happened 5 years ago that might have influenced her decision to cut you out of her life?
To make a long story very short, my son-in-law sexually assaulted me, and I finally told her about it, and that was it. She cut me off. I don't know if she doesn't believe me or doesn't care. Mm-hmm.
And Chris, how shocking that he did that to you, then she wouldn't believe or act on it appropriately. Was law enforcement involved in any of it?
No. I did not turn it over to them. Mm-hmm.
And Chris, as this took place, I'm wondering if you received any support or comfort from the people around you. Was your daughter's husband involved? Was he helpful to you at the time? Your daughter's father, your husband, your partner?
Ex-husband. We have no, very minimal contact. And no, but he has gone to Ireland and seen them and stayed with them, but he won't give me any information about how they're doing or anything.
And what's your question for us, Chris?
I don't know. Where do I go from here? How do I handle this? Other than just putting it in God's hands and saying, you know what's happened, you know where they are, and they are not believers. So I'm really kind of praying that somebody in their circle in Ireland will get radically saved and get them saved.
Yeah, it's it's so tough. Chris Williams, just to clarify.
Yeah, well, Chris, I just think that it just breaks my heart. I mean, and I feel like there are so many times where giving this advice, and it's really more of an encouragement and an invitation into something none of us want. And it's an invitation into grief. and the deep loss that you're experiencing from your daughter and her family, as well as healing for you in the sexual assault, my antennas immediately go up because I'm actually really concerned for your daughter and her family. This is obviously, and I'm sure you share the deep, deep concern way more than I do, but this is not a safe person. This is a dangerous man who can do some really damaging things to the point where he would move his family to another country. And so,
right.
Yeah. So if there is, do you have any other children?
Yes, she has two brothers, and she will talk to them, text them.
And are you in communication with them?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm very close with them.
That's fair.
They don't want to be put in the middle, so
That's very understandable, and I'm very, very grateful that you're close with them. But I would also just ask them, you know, without putting a ton of pressure on them, as, you know, keeping an eye out for their sister's safety and her family's safety. If they can put some antennas up to say that, like, hey, is there anything extra dangerous or difficult and threatening going on here?
And Chris, that may take revealing to them and your ex-husband what happened to you if you haven't yet. And it would be understandable if you haven't told anybody else. Do they know?
My oldest son knows. My middle son did not want to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that's the challenge too, Chris, because then you are carrying the burden on your own.
Yeah.
You know, I think what, Chris, you were talking about with the grieving process and that support, because there's two things that are going on. Your own healing, Chris, but also how do I move on when my daughter has left me and the rest of the family is kind of joined with her. I'm thinking, do you have a group around you, Chris, that, you know, more than a couple of people that are part of your support team?
Oh, yeah. I have a great, great group of ladies at church. And,
that's fantastic.
Work and yeah.
Chris, I want you to make sure you're talking with them and expressing your anger at everybody involved in this, and even possibly at God, that this has happened to your family, and then allow tears, allow sorrow as they come. And it's by processing those emotions that will help you be at a more stable place if you ever are able to be in contact with your daughter again.
I tell you, it's really a challenge to do the healing work, but it's worth it. We'll get you connected to a therapist in the area as well, Chris, because like we've been talking about, it helps to connect with somebody. Alice or Chris, do you have a book suggestion that we can send Chris?
Oh, I'm wondering if we do the emotional or the grief
freedom.
Emotional freedom workbook. Yeah.
Okay, we'll do it. We'll be right back.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. This is a last call for our Everyman's Battle Intensive, which we're going to do online this Saturday. It's not our last call. We're still taking calls at 1-800-229-3000 for the next hour. But I just wanted to say, if you are a man who has not dealt with your sexual integrity, that you're looking at porn, that maybe you are talking to women that are not your wife, that and in ways that she doesn't know about. If you know the shame of doing things that are not godly and your spouse doesn't know about it, or even if you're a single man and you are struggling with this, will you call us today, register for Every Man's Battle online? It's this Saturday. We have a short quiz that can help you assess your integrity. You can go to the Every Man's Battle page at newlife.com and take that free quiz there. We're going to go back to the calls. We're going to continue taking calls too. So if you have a question, call us 1-800-229-3000. We're going to talk with Colleen, who's calling us from Cleveland in the great state of Ohio, watches us on YouTube. And we are glad that you do. Colleen, how can we help you today?
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I'm just kind of calling about my granddaughter who just turned 11 a couple of weeks ago, and she's been dealing with severe panic attacks. And this has been going on for some time. A few years ago, she got very ill, and she had to go into the hospital, and ever since she came out, she it wasn't anything very serious, but she was on IVs, she was vomiting and had this, you know, terrible bug, and then she ended up into the hospital, and then she had to be on IVs, and she was there for a couple of days, and ever since she came out of there, I think she was five at the time, she's just had this fear to eat because she was afraid she was going to be sick, and it's just kind of escalated. And now she's 11. She's a very bright girl, a very deep thinker. She's since been homeschooled, and but she doesn't want to leave her mother ever, you know. And I've you know, had her here, and I have a beautiful relationship with her. We have really wonderful talks, and but I experienced her here one evening last summer where she was having a panic attack, and she really wants to go outside when that happens. She gets out of breath, and I felt so helpless because I couldn't help her, and I'm usually really kind of good with people, you know, that are having issues, and and so I prayed, and you know, maybe an hour later, the Lord just put it on me. We just lied on the floor, and I had my other, her two little sisters with me at the time, and I started singing, you know, military songs, like, you know, what they say when they're at boot camp, and I just kept making up words, and I am loved by God above, and then the kids were, you know, just kind of chanting along with me, and then finally she just started singing with me, and I was just so thankful for that. But it's really getting more severe. She is getting worse. She doesn't even want to eat. Yeah. You know.
And Colleen, is she receiving any help from counseling, from a therapist, psychiatrist?
Unfortunately, she is not. They did this morning. They contacted a counselor that's practices, and he's also a friend, but that is not his expertise. But he said he's going to meet with them, and then meet with them alone, and then meet with them with my granddaughter. But he does have he suggested someone else that he, you know, they could call as well.
Do you know any reason for their hesitation to get that highest level of help she might need again?
They're busy. They're very busy. My son is, I'm not going to say what he does but he's in the ministry, and
Colleen, and I want to give Chris and Alice enough time. This is a very severe situation. The great thing is you can nail it to what the precipitating event is, but the ongoing problem is getting worse. Alice or Chris, how can we help Colleen?
Colleen, I have super good news for you. Super good news, okay? Yes. Panic attacks are let me give you the tough news. They're difficult and they can be chronic. But here's the good news. They always end.
Oh.
Every single one of them always ends. Here's the better news. They're incredibly treatable. And so one of the things that as a loved one is that you want to try to avoid the contagion of the panic, the contagion of the anxiety, right? We see someone in distress and we all become distressed. That's a human response. It's, you know, that's empathy. That's great. The other thing is, you said she's a deep thinker. She's really smart. She might be a little bit more on the high sensitivity scale. That means that she absorbs more of the world around her, which contributes to her high level of intelligence and creativity. But every gift comes kind of with a belly side to it, with kind of a shadow side to it, a difficulty. And that is a person that is more affected by the world around them as well. And so a really good therapist will, one, help her be able to work through it, hopefully decrease the length and the time, the time that the panic attacks occur and the time in between they occur, and get some really good coping strategies. And the other thing about that is a greater support system around her to help her work through that. One of the mistakes that families make in the fear of the panic attack is further reclusion and isolation to prevent any stimuli from triggering it. And that's where we need a professional to come in, because we also don't want to do the other thing, like, you know, just shove her to the wolves. So a good therapist will really, really help her navigate what's going on inside of her, what she needs, and how to really recover from this really serious condition, but very treatable condition.
So it's, they're on the right track that they're now getting a counselor.
Yes.
And I want you to both support and praise your son that he's making time in his busy schedule for this to happen, but also describe the depth of anguish you saw your granddaughter go through.
That's
so
good.
He knows how bad it is. Then I'm going to give you three quick interventions. Sour taste has been shown to interrupt a panic attack. And so having Sour Patch Kids or lemon drops.
That's fantastic.
Peppermint oil, if you smell peppermint oil, and deep breathing. And you actually hit on another one, which is singing. Singing helps interrupt the circuitry of a panic attack taking place. So you said, I didn't know what to do. Well, you did the right thing. Singing and prayer, they're powerful interventions, Colleen.
Well, I hope my son doesn't listen to this, Alice, because he loves Sour Patch Kids and he's going to start faking the panic attacks.
Do you know, it's great. I love that you brought that up, though, too, Alice, because we do know that there are ways that we can connect with the brain in changing some of those neural pathways that have been established. Mm-hmm. Like I said before, you can figure out it started at that hospitalization and it's continued to grow. Now, the other aspect of this for you, Colleen, is you too need to learn those de-escalating traits as well, for, you know, as you enter in with her, and maybe you'll be singing all the time, but, you know, the instant image I had in my head was Elf, Buddy the Elf singing, I'm singing, I'm bringing you, you know. We're so glad that you called, Colleen. We'll get you connected with some options for counselors in that area that may be another resource, just, you know, along that same line. We're going to send you a copy of How We Love Our Kids. I think that'll be helpful. We're so grateful for you listeners and your callers. If you're on hold, please hold on. We'll get to you at the next show. Thank you, Chris, and thank you, Alice. And we'll see you next time here on New Life Live.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you'd take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing, and we're so glad that you're here.